listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Waru Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WaruiDesho or email us at waruidesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, and NBs, welcome to another Stream of Thought episode via Waru Desho. I am your host, the Subtle Doctor. I am absent of all desire because I wish to ascend to Nirvana by 2020. Oh no, your mic is muted, Shadon.
Well, amateur mistakes, you know, we've been amateurs for all this time. My apologies. But to recover somewhat from that little gaffe there, what I thought Doc was going to lead there was he's going to start saying that, you know, we'd sort of been sponsored by the Church of Scientology or something like that.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
I know. I mean, look, right, the siren call of money is great and all that, but yeah, don't put me down for anything religious at all.
What did Maynard James Keenan say in, or sing rather, in, I think the song is, the Tool song is Anemia, fuck L. Ron Hubbard and fuck all his clones. I'm down with that. I support this.
I hear you on that. Church of Satan, though, those guys I do like. But
they have a sense of humor.
Yeah, they do. I mean, so Church of Satan, like, official Twitter account, if you happen to be out there, if you do want to sponsor, you know, a fledgling anime podcast, I mean, I'm totally up for it. Not drawing pentagrams on there, mind you, but I certainly am up for it.
Now, if there was a church that followed the teachings of Mr. Satan from Dragon Ball, that's the one. That's the one you should join up with. I feel like he's the virtuous idol that we need to look to in these troubled times.
Then again, though, isn't he also basically like the Dan of Dragon Ball in that he's not very good?
Yep. And yet, everyone in the entire world believes that he's their savior. That he's incredible. He has everyone hoodwinked except for the Dragon Ball Z heroes, who sort of regard him as a pesky fly around their tail, so to speak.
Oh, boy.
This is Shadon, by the way. Everybody who could be joining us for the first time doesn't know who we are.
No, I like how L. Ron Hubbard had clones, I have clones of, you know, myself. I'm Shadon, too. Like, Shadon 1's just currently out taking a nap downstairs, and Shadon 3 is just doing my tax returns. Or our tax returns, I suppose we used to say.
Are you going to refer to yourself in the second person now throughout Shadon version 2?
It's going to get confusing otherwise, to be quite honest.
Well, I'm okay with that. Please keep it up throughout the entirety of the stream.
It's all right. If we go to a commercial break, I'll come back with a different shirt on instead and pretend I have to switch to a different clothes.
Beautiful. Well, Shadantu and everyone who's joining us, this is the Banana Fish 10 discussion stream.
Mm-hmm.
The, what is it?
The double digits.
It's not. Listen, what is this episode called? I have it written down, but I think I have the wrong thing written down.
Oh, dear.
Is it called Return to Babylon?
I believe it's, according to this, Babylon Revisited. So basically the same thing.
Okay. I'm going to check Amazon right now because... Oh, I just wrote down the wrong title. I wrote down The Beautiful and the Damned, which is the episode 11 title.
Coming very soon to a stream near you.
Right, right. Okay, let me just... For my notes, Babylon 5 Revisited. No. Were you a Babylon 5 person?
I sadly was not.
It was one of those things that, like... It came on after wrestling when I was a kid. And so sometimes I watched it.
I knew of its existence, but I never got into it because I was also similar age. And I barely, like... got much out of Star Trek back then anyway, so yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, you were not a Trekkie. I thought you were a born a Trekkie.
Not born, but growing to appreciate it over the course of time.
Okay.
You know. I mean, for me, like, you know, Babylon Revisited, it's either one of two things. It's either, you know, terrible Fate Stay Night fan fiction, or it's, you know, or it's, you know, a really cool reggae song. You decide.
Can it be both, please? And can that be... Like, can Bob Marley be one of the legendary heroes that is summoned?
Well, he's well, he already. You know, they are going to run out of historical figures eventually, so they have to start bringing it closer and closer. I'm going to say he's a caster.
Okay, a Rasta caster.
I'm going to say so because, I mean, you know. His music was pretty magical, so there is that.
It was.
Yeah.
Hey.
But, hey, so, yeah, I can't wait, like, you know, to come back in 10 years' time and then just, like, you know, check my Twitter feed when I'm in my 40s. It's like, right, what are the kids up to these days? They're playing Fate Grand Order and they've just finally unlocked, you know, Berserker class Bill Gates.
They rolled Elvis. Oh, my God. Lady Elvis, that's a natural fit, I feel like.
Johnny Cash and his noble phantasm, the Ring of Fire.
Yes. It has to be. And I feel like Elvis's has to be the Heartbreak Hotel, right?
Yeah, that's true.
That feels like a stand name from JoJo's. Surely there's a stand called Heartbreak Hotel. I feel like there has to be.
Or Blue Switch. It's gotta be. It's gotta be.
But then you start thinking about, like, the blue suede goo from the Clay Fighter. Did you ever play Clay Fighter? You never played Clay Fighter. There's
right, I'm leaving. Bye now.
It was a Super Nintendo.
I was a Sega
fighting
kid.
Game. I think there might have been a Sega port. There was a Nintendo 64
Sega
sequel. Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, you got the better version of Mortal Kombat.
I didn't even play that, so it doesn't count. I can't win here.
Well, so there was a character called... All the characters were realistic-looking clay, which was cool back in the 16-bit days. And there was, like, you know, Bad Mr. Frosty was a snowman. Ichabod Clay was a sort of headless horseman type. And then Blue Suede Goo was, you know, Fat Elvis in clay. I feel like when Elvis becomes a fate, heroic spirit, it can't be Fat Elvis. It has to be like Skinny Elvis that did all those movies in Hawaii, like handsome.
It'll be
Elvis.
Gender bend for a star.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the going rate these days is that if you are, you know, canonically male in, you know, modern history and fate, then you will be like nothing wrong with that necessarily. I should stress, but well, I don't know. We've read some interesting times there when they finally do completely mine out all of ancient history. Or maybe they'll just keep reinventing, you know, Saber over and over again. Like, maybe we'll finally get that inevitable Monty Python crossover we've been expecting all this time.
Oh, just, boy. Just all right. I have to pull us up from the muck of fate, wishful thinking. By the way, I see here that Luther in chat says that Babylon Revisited is another F. Scott Fitzgerald reference, and
get them all in.
My God, the people behind this show, like, they love them some F. Scott.
And either that, or they're great fans of Wikipedia.
Let's go with that, because frankly, like,
does that mean episode 24 is just going to be like open bracket end bracket citation needed?
Yes, I hope so. I liked the Great Gatsby, but I didn't like love it. So I guess.
So you would say it wasn't No, not doing it. Not doing it. And you can't name a book like that and then get people to review it and not have them use that as ammo against you. This is like when Sony did the Amazing Spider-Man movies and they were all crap. So the reviewers, you know, they could do that at 5 o'clock, you know, on a Friday afternoon, like, Amazing Spider-Man, not so amazing. Ding! Hey. Right off the book.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess. I don't know. I read it a long time ago. Maybe there's more to it. Or maybe
I've never read it, really.
Maybe the other books are better, but okay. Enough stalling. It's time to talk about the fish. But before we move on to episode 10, we have to revisit the
Twitter poll
from episode 9, the Twitter polls. So,
indeed.
All right. Show me those results. Read them and weep, my friend.
Well, okay, so we had two polls last time. The first one, the one designed to, you know, weed out, you know, the degenerates in our audience and the people who are downright crazy. This is the poll. If Goldzine was the captain of a cruise ship, would you set sail with him? We end up having 25 votes. 96% said abandoned ship. And 4%, whoever you poor people may be, said anchors away. I'll give you credit if you're only doing it because you're going to sink the ship with him on it. I'll allow you to get away with it. Otherwise, I got nothing. The second poll. Is Ash Lynx's character meant to be a female power fantasy? So, Mike, more serious than, you know, his, you know, Golzine, you know, the next Titanic or something
little.
Like that.
Right.
And Mike, more serious. But anyway, 67% out of 24 votes in total said no, and 33% said yes.
I'm inclined to agree with our voters. I do. It is an interesting thought, though. Very intriguing. So, Shadan has to take a brief break. So, with that said, I don't want him to miss out on any of the super fun discussion. So, we're going to kick it to a break for now, but we will be right back. Okay, now we're officially back. Sorry about that.
I threw up the... yeah. Doc threw up the, you know, you're being a fool sign.
No, anyway,
I had to go nip it. I just wanted to go nip and say hi to my dad who just got back from work.
Oh,
and also tell him that, you know, our freezer had been bleeding as well. So that happened. Fun times. Yeah, we're going to use it, you know, next time we have a visitor around, just convince one there's a seven head in there. So, you know. But anyway, so yeah, last poll we had. 33% said yes, Ashlinks is a female power fantasy, 67% said no. One thing I'll just add to this particular poll as just an observation is, I think that, and this will tie in something I wanted to get into in a moment, with this sort of thing, there's no right or wrong answer in my opinion. I mean, even if the authors, be it of the show or the actual manga itself, flat out said yes or no, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean you can't read that way. I mean, this is the old thing, you know, once you release a work of fiction in the wild, well, you know, it's up to you then to interpret. It's everyone's. Yeah, or even if you go so far as to say something that you don't mean to be offensive, but then it turns out to be the case because, well, you're ignorant or you just let it slip for any number of reasons. So all I'll say is that if you feel that Ash is a female power fantasy, that's great. And if you feel he's not, that's also great. So there we go. Agreed.
Yeah,
I've solved the internet for all and forever now. We may never have any more eggs again. Twitter's going to become a fucking paradise tomorrow.
You win.
Not really. I really wish. I really wish. All right. And now I want to get some help.
You got the seven gold letters versus the internet.
Indeed. All right. So I want to get some quick housekeeping out of the way because unfortunately I have to be very nousy about some stuff. Oh boy, I love doing this. I did it in Frank's once when we had the death threats about fucking Ichigo's. You get the shit right anyway.
Christ Almighty! Just thinking about that. Like, it was just absurd. It was an absurd happening. If you're out of the loop, I bet there are a lot of people that like are watching Banana Fish that didn't watch Darling in the Franxx. First of all, let me just say congratulations.
Great. You're living fantastic.
You're living on a good timeline.
I mean, people use the word objectively a little bit too much and often as hyperbole, but your life is objectively better than having seen that show. So congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've done it.
So just to make this very short and sweet, there were some so in episode like 13 or 14, one female character kissed a boy, the main character, and that boy main character was into another girl, and because this happened, there were people on Twitter and the internet that decided that they should threaten the life of the creators of the show. That's what happened.
Yep. So,
King Kardashian
does indeed like it. And you know what? That's great. That's another thing we funnily enough addressed that I never thought I'd say, you know, or go to on a live stream about a show. Anyway, so to the topics at hand. First off, two things I want to point out. So, there's been some discussion.
I'm going to ban you. Ichigo's best girl. We will not use that language in here.
Right, okay.
I'm just kidding.
Right. You sort your first out. Let's actually talk about this. So, okay, two things I just want to address very quickly. First off, let's talk about distinctions between original material and adaptation. So, I have a pet peeve here. And a pet peeve of mine is this, is when people say, oh, it was like this in the manga, or it was like the manga. Now, I'm interested in that academically speaking. I find it fascinating, for example, in the case of Banana Fish, to see what changes they've made versus what they've not. But in terms of canonicity, whatever actually happens in the manga, as far as I'm concerned, is irrelevant to the show. So if you're telling me that there's no way on God's green earth that anyone can interpret, you know, Ash or Eiji's relationship in a certain way because the manga explicitly stated otherwise, I could not give less of a toss. It's as simple as that.
The very fair
because
point.
All I'm interested in is what the show presents. Like I say, what the actual manga is, as far as I'm concerned, I'm interested in academically. I'm interested in, you know, the process of adaptation. I find it's an absolute fascinating thing to do. Mm-hmm. Like the choices you have to make. What do you trim? What do you keep? What do you add? You know, it's all different spectrum of it. But canonicity means nothing. I mean, people, you know, have made apologies to me before when I used to quite like Halo when I was younger. Even when I was younger, I said, you guys, you do realize this story is completely absent of most of the meat. I was like, but it's in the novel. It's in the novel that ties in with it. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a flying shit. It's not in the fucking game. I'm a game player, not a novel, a reader first and foremost. I shouldn't have to do homework to understand this. So it doesn't matter. So I am more interested for you all to keep telling me, you know, things about the manga that, you know, would be interesting academically speaking. But if you're going to try and tell me that I, you know, don't know what I'm talking about, or anyone else for that matter, you know, because the manga is explicitly different, mm-hmm. well, I'm just going to ignore it. Simple as that.
We'll judge it on its own terms, just like we'll do the show, I think.
Exactly.
But please keep informing us of differences, like Shadon says. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I don't... hopefully no one is saying, well, you don't know what you're talking about, or your theory is wrong, or you're not even a theory, right? Because it's one thing to talk about like these events will or not come to pass, but your interpretation of a thing is wrong. Yeah, well, that all remains to be seen and will play out, and we can then, I think we can have much more beneficial discussions on that front, like when the show's over.
Quite right. Exactly. Second point I want to make, let's talk about labels, and let's talk about specifically the idea of boil-off. So, recently there's been the discourse, quote-unquote, a term I'm beginning to hate in the same way that I'd hear, you know, oh, the bubonic plague's in town. You know, it feels about as appealing to me hearing that. Specifically on if banana fish is boil-off or not. Nothing wrong with having that discussion, I should stress. What I do not like in the slightest is when people start insulting other people about it. ANN, I think there was a recent article out by Gabamatic, yep, in which people cite signs who harass them. Great, fantastic. No, don't fucking do that. We had this discussion before. Please fucking stop. Like, this is... I'm honestly perplexed at times why people get so tied up in knots by it. It's like, you are welcome to disagree about it, but that does not mean you need to make personal attacks on someone else. If the accusations or the things that are being said were so much more serious, like if they were outright being racist or something, then I might, you know, comprehend the logic behind that. When it's an opinion piece on, you know, what label a show falls on, that's, you know, a bit fucking much. So, no, please don't do that. Like, the shit with Frank's, you know, I somewhat expected a little bit more because I don't think, you know, I mean, that show was just bad all around, but this, I would hope, you know, deserves better respect. That being said, I will also say something else while I'm here. So, once again, just to throw it out there, myself and Doc with CISAP. So, we're obviously coming to this from a particular perspective, and in my mind, I think that it's a perspective that will always limit how we can interpret this work to a certain degree. I mean, for a start, we're not the target audience. Secondly, we're not even the same sexuality necessarily of the characters, be that bi or flat out gay. So, all I'm going to say is this, right? We'll be honest with it. We'll be fair with it. But we're not going to pretend to be the arbiters of, you know, what's right or wrong with this. And similarly, there are people who are very invested with Banana Fish because it's formative to them. It helped them understand their own identity. That's not something I will ever be able to do because, well, my identity, unfortunately, is pretty solidly, like, you know, set at this point. I'm sad to say, I'm afraid, you know, warts and all. So ultimately, people are going to feel probably very differently about the show, particularly when it ties into, you know, that idea of coming out and embracing your own identity. So give people the space to, you know, be expressive about that, to be honest about it. That it might mean a lot more to them than it might mean to you. Just, you know, let's enjoy it. Let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. Let's not, you know, be mean or malicious to other people because they feel differently. Yeah. And as for labels, labels are the start of a discussion, they are never the end. Mm-hmm. I said this to Doc off cast, but if I was reviewing Doom 2016 and my review was simply it's a first-person shooter, I'd be laughed. I'd be laughed at. Like, the boil-off element, from my perspective, has been done really well in Banana Fish in parts, and in one particular part in the very last episode we covered, I thought was actually quite bad, because it, you know, tonally clashed with the material that was present. So, just throwing all that out there, I'm not angry at anyone in particular that I know in the chat, you're all awesome.
No.
But I don't like letting these things go unaddressed, because to be honest, like, I'm of the opinion that if something's stupid, it needs to be called out. Mm-hmm. So, that's all the housekeeping I want to do. I don't like doing housekeeping. The last time I did it, I ended up having a voice like, you know, that sounded like Skeletor after just drank whiskey for a couple of hours. So with that out of the way, we're now going to move on to talk about episode 10, which is...
Oh, well, actually, may I respond to some of the things that you said?
Hit me.
And
not literally, please don't hit me.
Pow. No, just...
Ow!
Okay, so I do see in chat that someone was confused about the tone of Gabby's article. And I understand that, like, having read it myself, like, I do see how you could take isolated parts and say, like, wait a minute, like, is she taking a dig? But you know, like you said, whatever her opinion is, it doesn't warrant people, like, actively, like, bothering her beyond, like, trying to have a fruitful discussion about the material or the his. I thought that was a fantastic article in terms of, like, I wish I remembered it, because I feel like it's all like the history stuff that she put forward is actually quite useful for contextualizing this show and interpreting it and just understanding the genre's history. And then So it's funny that you talk about, like, reviewing Doom, and if you call it a first-person shooter, I think, like, I know that the, boy, like, the term boys love, I guess, or it, I don't even know anymore if it's a synonym or a just slightly different thing, right? Shonen-ai, yaoi, like, Gabby's article makes the claim that they're all kind of distinct, slightly different things, but I know those terms have, like, for some people maybe have, like, they're value laden, they have some baggage and stuff. But I just, yeah, I don't know. I don't belong, I guess, to communities that sort of talk about, and I just don't really understand the baggage or whatever. So to me, it just sounds like we're having a debate about how to classify a thing genre wise. And the debate, mm-hmm. the debate is between, on the one hand, the choice we have is to call it something based on who the target audience was, and on the other hand, we have, like, call it something based on the content therein. Yeah. And I know those concepts aren't entirely without, like, some mingling. They're not entirely separate. Yeah. But to me, they're mostly separate. Yeah. But they're mostly separate. It'd be like if you were like, Doom is a rated M game. Period. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that tell you about the sort of game it is? I mean, there's all kinds of shoujo, right? I mean, shoujo doesn't mean a thing. And that's why I guess usually people will say a shoujo and then follow it up with, like, crime drama, romance, comedy, action. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just have found it way more useful to classify things based on elements in the show and content rather than kind of who it was originally marketed towards. Because that just doesn't even matter so much anyway, especially when we're talking about today. Like, I mean, there's just as many not ladies watching Banana Fish and consuming it as there are ladies. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where I come down. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
I think for me, at the end of the day, it's just to analogize. Like, you could say all day, okay, where in this grocery aisle are we putting this tray of apples? And you can argue that all day. You know, or maybe we can argue, like, you know, is a tomato a fruit or a vegetable? You can have the labeling discussion all you want. What I'm interested in is how it tastes. And that's what I'll talk to you about. So, simple as that. But yeah, sorry to get nosy there, folks, but like I say, every time I see this happen, it just makes me groan and I can't not address it. It kind of just, unfortunately, rubs some part of my occipital lobe or my, you know, the back of my brain and just makes me go off on one, so... Anyway, we're going to talk about the show now.
All right.
By the way, that's not the last Doom comparison that I'm going to make, as it turns out, for reasons that will become apparently clear very soon indeed.
All right, here we go with episode 10, Babylon Revisited. High level overview. So, the episode begins with Ash uttering the line, "Just kill me." Yulung sees the newspaper. Eiji is an emotional wreck. What does Yutlung see in the newspaper? I don't remember. Maybe something to do with the political meeting that is later coming into play. I don't recall. Someone in the chat will let us know. But
I think Yut is actually when he, because he enters the dungeon area and starts overhearing the conversation between Arthur and Ash after the, you know, events of the previous episode concluded.
Okay.
So I don't think I think the newspaper is something related to events that happen later on, as it turns out.
Okay.
Not the last time that, you know, that we're going to mention newspapers, because there was one of the funniest little insert shots I've ever seen in anime related to newspapers, and we'll get to it when we get to Golzin and, you know, his old morning routine.
Right. Thank you, Trickster. I thought that was the case, that it was about the politician being in town. Yutlung comes in to see Ash, and he appears distressed. He is a little emotional for him during this scene. Also, we see that Dino is not going to kill Ash because there's a perfect ceremony for Banana Fish to be used tonight. So we're going to, you know, hold off on the killing of the Lynx. And in this scene, I just want to point out that Arthur has the infamous U-tuck of which I cannot abide. Are you familiar with the U-tuck? Where you tuck in your shirt at the belt buckle and nowhere else?
Oh, man.
If you're going to tuck in your shirt.
Who do you think he is? Nathan Drake? Come on.
You go all the way. Like, I mean, it's, yeah, Nathan Drake, like, he's running, jumping on cliffs, dodging bullets and shit. Like, if his shirt comes untucked, he has an attack. Like, Arthur is just like, it's a fashion statement. And many people wear the U-tuck, as I call it, as a fashion statement.
Arthur!
Don't! To just go all the way or go all the way untucked. You don't need to show off your belt buckle, IMO.
Catch you later, Lou Belf. Cheers for jumping by.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, Arthur is like the biggest tryhard. It's actually kind of embarrassing how much of a tryhard he is. I mean, seriously, if he were any closer to Galzine's backside, there'd be smoke coming out of his mouth and right up it, because that's all he ever does. That's all the impression I ever get he does. Seriously.
Yeah. And all Galzine ever seems to do is talk about Ash, so I'm sure Arthur's very happy about that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's absolutely loving it.
So, the gangs, Ash's gang and Shorter's former crew, are planning to attack Galzine. Yulung makes a call to his brother, his older but oldest brother.
Oh, sorry to intervene, but this is the bare wise mention. So,
okay.
You mentioned before, like, Galzine and Arthur talking about the discussion, you know, of perfect ceremony for Narfish. Galzine is reading the newspaper. And one of the things I like to do whenever I watch shows like this is stop and read the newspaper's print and see what actually is going on. And the front page of this says World News, and on the right-hand side it says, why not try deep-sea fishing? And I'm like, holy shit, was that a slow news day? And you know what's maddening? Like, I thought that was just a comedic insert, like, because, again, they're not doing the whole Lorem Ipsum shit, but there's a reason for that, because they're going to be making big news with what they do later on in this same episode. I was like, that's insane! Let's try deep sea fishing on the front page. Oh my god.
Man.
Hello, Blue Sea.
So good.
Yep,
hello,
but
Blue Sea.
Yes, you mentioned about the phone call.
Yeah, he calls his older brother, but not the oldest brother, to give him information on the conspiracy that it's happening with Galzine, that he has...
And something straight out of MI5's Q, you know, that little, like the little earpiece that, like, yeah. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, totally. It's another, like, pin, but it's a communicator. But yeah, it's interesting. Some of it he's seen, and I think some of it he's kind of put together in his head based on seeing the newspaper. But I actually misspoke because he hasn't come to see Ash at this point, I don't believe. But, because we see the next the flashback to Griff, and who morphs into Eiji, and as Ash is waking up from unconsciousness, he says Eiji's name, but of course, it's not Eiji who greets him, but Yulung, and he's putting ointment on Ash, and Ash is very upset that Yulung is touching him, that Yulung is here, that Yulung has the audacity to say he's sorry about Shorter. He really does seem sorry, but I'll get to that point later on when we do our talking points, but, Ash, says when Yulung gives him the key to get out, and he says, many things he says to him in that scene, he says, like, I didn't know you were also vulnerable. He appears to feel some pity for Ash, says, like, head-on attacks you can take, but when people attack your friends, that hurts you. I'll give you this key. You may not be able to get your revenge, but at least you can save people that you care about. And Ash says, well, you'll regret this day. You'll rue the day that you showed mercy on me, which is like, this is another point I want to get to down the line, but this seems like a recurring sort of interaction, like a domino effect that we have between all the characters here. And then he gets the key and escapes. And then...
Oh my god, how guns. He gets the key.
Oh,
how he gets the key. Yeah. Holy shit.
Wow.
Like, I was expecting something relatively simplistic, like, say, he nudges the keys to the floor and picks up between, you know, his feet and then brings his feet up or something like that. But no, he starts doing the bloody Olympics, gymnastics, you know, whatever it is, like, spinning around it. I'm like, Holy shit! Wait! Is he Ash or is he fucking Spider-Man? Oh my god.
Yeah, I was... There's a lot of things that can happen when you do that to your body that are not good. But he managed to get out, and then it's time for guns. It's time for battles.
Well,
it's
time for
bullets and grenades.
Don't forget about what happens in the hotel, though.
Tell me.
Okay, so you mentioned in the previous episode, Doc, that, like, what on earth are they going to do with Banana Fish? Like, what's its purpose? And here's the thing they do, right? Turns out there's a presidential candidate in town.
Right.
In what's called the world's highest hotel. I'm like, well, what? Could have been a premier inn or something, could it? Probably analogous for a certain place in New York that, you know, will not be mentioned because, well, fuck that festering shitsel. But anyway, so what they do, Goldzine and co, is that they drug up this random woman and order her to kill this presidential candidate. And after the presidential candidate is then stabbed viciously to death, various people bump into the room, find him, like, you know, lying in a pool of his own blood, see the woman there, and she's all sweaty profuse, like, save me, and then stabs herself. Now, I'm going to very quickly divert just to mention on something about this. Like, I think that this is exactly like what they were going to do. Like, you know, if they see someone who's just completely crazy and then kills themselves, and if they can't then identify what did it in toxicology, there you go. There's your assassination weapon right there.
Yeah.
Well, it's a treat. So, well, you know, that's one presidential candidate gone, I'm afraid. God damn it. And I'll bet you Golzi would say it was because of his emails as well.
I wonder if he was a Democrat.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Or maybe the seedy Republican guys are getting rid of their rivals for the nomination. Who knows?
Oh! I do have to intervene. Is it worth me now bringing up something about what was it called again? It's something that shouts to Kay from Anime is Lit. She actually told me about this.
Oh yeah, MK Ultra.
And it's the most MK Ultra. Holy shit! All right, okay, I'll bring this up very quickly. So people have been saying, like, you know, okay, Banana Fish's plot and the whole idea of using a drug to mind control people is crazy.
Yeah, that was another thing that people took Gab to task for, because she said that the plot was silly, and some people took greater offense to that than other people. But yeah. So other people, I think, have said that before as well, like, oh, this is some zany, wacky, like, conspiracy shit happening.
Well, about that. Okay. MK Ultra, folks, no, this is not another Mortal Kombat version, nor is it as I originally thought, because I had no idea what Kay was talking about when she mentioned this. It's not also like some sort of like extremely ultra violent late 80s anime.
Is it the Nintendo 64 port?
MK fucking Ultra,
yeah,
was a program run, I think, in joint by at least the CIA and the FBI for over 20 years. That's right, 2 times 10, 20 years between the 50s and the 70s. And the program's explicit goal was to find ways to use LSD and other drugs to mind control people.
Oh, yes.
That's like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kate, if you're listening, firstly, thank you for telling me about that.
Yeah.
That's such amazing context. Two, holy fucking shit. Like, you know, people, like, you know, say tinfoil hats and all that, and they get, like, works up about Rothschild conspiracy shit and that people are lizards and all that. And, of course, I don't buy any of that. But then I read about stuff like this, and I think, you know, there is no smoke without fire. So, what do you make of that? I don't even know what to say about it. So, yeah, it's naturally surprisingly not as crazy as you might think.
National security is a fucking nightmare.
Just for context, I think that the information regarding MKUltra was only actually brought to light through Freedom of Information requests. In the late 90s or early 2000s. So the person writing Banana Fish,
unless they were,
you know, in the loop, so to speak, wouldn't have known about that. But yeah, holy fuck, that blew my mind. So thank you for that, Kay.
What a reveal! I'm just going to post the Wikipedia link in the chat for anybody that wants to take a gander and be sad that our the people that supposedly protect us from the shadows are doing this kind of shit. Okay, but
fucking blew my mind.
Yeah, now it's time to talk about Rambo and or Doom
and Commando.
Indeed, because
I mean, when they get to the armory, there is a montage of them gearing up, and I'm just yes. like, holy shit.
You're just playing Rocky music in your head.
Oh my god, like, it was fucking ridiculous. It was like... it just blew
like,
my mind.
It was so awesome. Like, I needed 80 synth when they're, like, taking apart the guns and, like, refitting, like, shorter stocks and, like, clicking the barrels. And if I was just like, oh... Yes, put on the bandolier and the grenade holsters. So good.
Yeah, honestly, like this episode is catharsis through and through. Like you've been waiting for like some right retribution to come your way, and it does happen. It definitely happens. Someone gets fucking turned to Swiss cheese, and by God, did he deserve it? We'll get to that soon enough.
So, let's see. Gotta find my place in the notes. Oh, yeah. So, one of the first people that Ash gets to take out is those fuckers that took him from his house.
Mm-hmm.
That kidnapped him. The guy, the tiny mustache and the sunglasses.
Wait, those are the fuckers who also assaulted Jessica, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And recently,
the old man wanted me to put a bullet in you.
I know. I have to say, I'm actually kind of sad that Max didn't get his wicked way with them. But, well, it is what it is, so it doesn't really matter. but I have to say, by the way, like Max is tooled up as well, but how many times is he actually getting on the action this episode?
I mean,
it doesn't feel like a lot.
He and eBay are sidelined, for sure. No question. So, whenever Sing, Su Ling, and the gang members meet up with them in the hall, it's like, yay, like, everyone is together. Boy, I hope this is not a giant trap where they all get fucked over because all the enemies of Dino decided to meet in one place. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, they're like, oh, we gotta get shorter. And at one point, one of the goons, is like, Shorter Wong, he's dead. Killed by Ash. I saw it with my own eyes. He was the devil himself. And it's like, wow, what a revealing guard. He's so forthcoming with
information. He's bleeding out. He might as well. Why not?
At least, I mean, credit to Singh as a leader. You know, he's like, look. Don't tell anybody. This is crazy. It might not be true. We got to figure things out. So
context is key, except when it starts, we'll find out later.
So Ash finally finds Eiji, mm-hmm. kills a lot of people along the way, and you know, Eiji's calling out for him, and he hears his voice, breaks into the room, and boy, Ash's relief, like, I think that they depicted it really, really well. It was really well shot where you sort of see kind of his expression change very clearly, and the camera does the thing where it kind of pans down, and just those effects together I thought were really illustrative of, okay, yeah, I can be there, I can feel that relief, you know? Mm. And he's so happy. Well, not even happy. I don't even think he's there. He's just relieved that Eiji's all right.
Yeah, relieved, definitely, yeah. Takes me to the edge.
And so he's going to get him out of there, and he wants a gun, because Eiji's finally kind of, I think, accepted that. He makes a couple of strides forward, I think, in terms of sort of realizing the situation he's in and mm-hmm. being pragmatic about things, but he wants a gun to protect himself, and Ash says that there only needs to be one murderer, so you don't need one, and I'll protect you, and you know, stay right by my side, don't leave my side ever. And
mm-hmm.
so Ash clearly values Eiji's innocence quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a point I will bring up later.
I was gonna do the exact fucking same thing, but we'll get to that.
So, let's see. So, oh, cut to Abraham. Cut to Abraham Dawson.
Oh, this pencil net motherfucker.
King Douche himself.
I swear blind when this scene was happening, I half expected to start speaking in the mad scientist talk. Yes, I am performing the experiments.
Right.
The brain of this particular boy, it is most useful for advancing my drug programs.
Yeah, okay. Would you pass me that banana fish? No, not the strawberry fish. No, the cherry fish. The banana. Where is it?
Not Sidious Salinger novel. I am mad scientist. I am not reviewer for New York Times. What's your take before?
What if someone did hand him the J.D. Salinger book? That would be good.
The bucket. Actually throw the bucket in.
Well, so his colleagues are getting the hell out of the building because they understand. Yeah. And he is trying to get his data and samples and everything together.
Yeah, he's got to, you know, get his torrents off the drive, you know, collect his hentai, you know, all his pornography.
Format the PCs.
Yeah. Look, right, I've been working on my cryptocurrency for weeks, and I am not letting this shit go. It will be worth something someday.
Gotta wipe all the tablets and return them to manufacturer's condition. while he's doing that, our boy Yudlung slides in, and oh boy. You just know that something fucked up. I mean, he just looks like... I mean, he's a snake. Something bad is going to happen. So he, you know, slithers up to this guy, says, you're the guy that made Banana Fish, that killed Ash's brother and made him kill his friend. Something bad is going to happen to you. And isn't it ironic that the man who made this horrible, you know, death-dealing... drug is afraid to die, pokes him with the same sort of deal or a similar one that he used on eBay. Abraham could still talk and process everything. It, you know, eBay couldn't talk.
He's just paralyzed.
He can't move. And so Ash shows up and is face to face with this guy, sees the remains of Shorter and what they're doing to it. Thankfully, once again, the anime doesn't like show, you know, the whole nine there. It kind of goes around it, kind of blurs
you
the
can
edges
imagine,
a little
yeah.
bit, but you could definitely
the show is consistently good with that, and I really appreciate it.
And oh man, like Ash proceeds to, you know, pump the guy full of an entire round case. I don't know, as many bullets as he got left in the gun.
An entire clip. Like, entire magazine. Turns him into Swiss cheese.
And just total, like...
He keeps clicking the trigger even after the clip is emptied, which put a pin in that because I want to bring that up later.
So,
but yeah, that happens.
Just like... He just has a look of like sadness or pity, or it's very vacant, but it's also sad. And of course, afterwards, he cries out in anguish.
Something I want to mention is if you've seen, I think it's Rambo 2. There's a scene in There's a scene in which Rambo arrives in like a cent. I can't remember the name of the place, but like it's where all the radios are. He just starts shooting him with his M60. And he raises his gun to the air and starts shooting that as well and starts screaming. Classic Stallone scream, of course. Basically the same thing, which is venting anger, like, just... almost primal, even, I would say. Like, the animal motif circumstances. This is where, like, something we'll get to later again, but, like, it almost feels a little bit like he's going feral, in a sense, because he's just been pushed that far.
Yeah, for sure. And I've gone a little bit out of order, so sorry about that. So before, I think they go to the garage, Ash, Aji, and the gangs, the young boys, and they fuck up the cars of
so they won't be pursued, all of them except for the gang's vehicles that they brought, and of course, which I don't even think are in that garage, but then Ash's special car that he wants to drive away. And he sends them all away because he's got to go back in and see what's up with Shorter and eventually kill Abraham Dawson. And AG says to him, you know, look, I understand I can't go with you. Like, I get it. You know, he seems to have some maturity about this and says, you know, look, if I ever lose you, if I lose you now, like, I'll go crazy. Mm-hmm. And as Ash turns away to leave, you know, AG says, you know, I'll wait for you. Come back. I'll wait for you forever. And it's good stuff. Man.
It's very good. It's very good stuff, and I just hope it's not horrific foreshadowing for later. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, I don't think I'll be able to cope. Jesus, but yeah, all good.
Well, not a lot left after the killing of Abraham. So, Ash gets to rumble with Su Ling, and shows him that he's in another galaxy, especially as Yutlung puts it later, when he's a wounded tiger, because those are the most dangerous creatures on Earth. And at that point, Ash is pretty pissed off.
Indeed. In fact, he makes no effort to offer any context. Like, when Su Ling accuses him of killing Shorter, which he technically did, but there is context behind
it. I hate this, by the way.
Ash doesn't say anything. I'm a bit conflicted on it as well, I must confess, but we'll get to that, because I'm sure it'll be a talking point. But we'll come to that sooner. But yeah, just to clarify, Ash does not explain away any of his own actions. I mean, this is the thing I've said before, right, when it comes to stuff like, what's happened?
Oh, man. So just Trickster mentions, like, the best, like, yes, whenever AG and Ash are having this super meaningful, like, dialogue, and he's saying, like, I'll wait for you forever, like, please don't leave me. I can't lose you. You sort of see Alex in the background, and then it cuts to him fully, and he just has this look on his face like, what the fuck? Who the fuck is this kid? What is happening right now to our boss? Our badass boss is like, you know, he's fallen in love or something. But that made me happy.
But yeah, Ash doesn't try to explain. I mean, the thing is, like, it might not, if he had even tried to explain, Su Ling might not boss it. I mean, this is the thing about scenes in other shows, like Frank's again, where, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that characters need to succeed, but they need to at least attempt. But he doesn't even try. Now, I will stress,
at least this scene, I mean, this one particular scene, I think you could probably understand it, right?
Yes, I can. Although I have misgivings about its overall purpose, but again, I'm saving it. So, moving on.
Yeah, so when Sing is thoroughly beaten and intimidated, he tells Lung how intimidating he was. Or I think he's just saying that to himself later, but I loved that. He's like, damn, he is intimidating.
He's on another level.
Yes, but when Ash thoroughly beats him down and says, like, I told you, I'm not in a good mood, go away. He swears he will, you know, he says, you'll regret showing me mercy. Where have we heard that before? He's like, look, I'll kill you one day for what you've done to Shorter. Like, don't forget this. And then Yutlung is like, hey, Sing, come with me, or I'm going to kill all these.
Come with me if you want to live.
Come with me if you want to live. Sing.
Get to the chopper. No, that's Sing really what they do. Sing. They get to the chopper, quite literally. Like, we're getting all the audience comparisons in here. It's amazing.
Do it! Do it now, Su Ling! Well, so, like...
I keep forgetting how good your audience impression is. It's honestly really scary, but I love it. I fucking love that shit. Mm. Oh, my God. Anyway.
So, he, like, you know, he goes with it. And he has an interesting conversation during the credits with Yutlung on the chopper when he's like, you know, fuck those old guys. Like, I don't give a shit about the rules. You know, who cares? Because I think that's prompted by Yutlung saying, like, the reason I'm doing this is to save you, because the old heads at the, you know, the front of the mob will not be happy that your group has defied me and Golzin. And so, yeah, he's like, well, fuck them, fuck the rules. And he's like, well, look, Shorter was into the rules and respected them. And it turns out that's the reason that Singh and his crew have been holding back, because they respect Shorter, but now they want to kill Ash. Basically, you know, telling him all the things that we know. And there's this look on Yulung's face when he asks, so... how was the Lynx? Oh boy!
It's the most amazing look. It smelled great. Didn't really attract any women to me, you know, and all that. I mean, it was the dry version, but I don't feel I got the full. Wait, sorry, wrong script. Shit. Yeah, it's not. He's not talking about the antiperspirant.
Oh man, like. it does a delayed reaction from your wonderful joke. But no, that was quite a look. That was such a look on his face. Like, boy.
This is a bad joke, to be fair.
No, it was great. I love it. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Please don't stop. And yeah, that's basically the end of the episode. When Lung says, you know, Ash, there's... He praises Singh and says, you got something to you. Like, you can accept, realistically accept where you are. You accepted your loss to Ash. Like, you'll grow from it. There's no shame in losing to him now, because he's a wounded tiger. And then that's it. We've revisited Babylon. Well, no, I guess we see Ash driving into Manhattan. And Su Ling is like, welcome back to the big leagues or some shit.
Yeah, we're going back to the downtown. You know, right. We're Bronxing it up. Let's go. Just for quick context, by the way, Max and eBay have escaped separately. They're walking down the highway. I don't know why they decide to do that and not think themselves out. You know, let's go find Ash and all that. But yeah, whatever. But yeah, they've all escaped. Golzin's mansion is now a smoldering crater. Abraham looks...
He didn't get back in time. His mansion was annihilated.
His mansion was annihilated.
The Banana Fish is gone.
Well, they do have the other guy. It just depends if they can coerce him to make it again.
That's the thing. That's true.
So they still have him. They know he made it with his brother. His brother's dead doesn't mean he can't. He was
but
the one originally.
They burned the house. They burned the computer.
They still have him. They still have him. They can force him to do it.
Oh, didn't you they? Know. Did they not kill him, the old man?
No, they didn't. Oh. They defied my prediction, which was I thought Abraham was going to kill his brother.
He's still kicking around. Okay.
Yeah, he's still around. But yeah, like so. Revenge is a dish best served, you know, hot, flaming, and well, with a full clip of lead as well. That's what happens in this episode.
According to Luther, Yudlung also took the other guy because he's smart.
So fair enough then.
Golzin is all he's left with is Arthur. So enjoy that, asshole.
Oh, great! Fucking brilliant. You would do better with a fucking shop floor mannequin than that useless wanker. Honestly. That's the episode.
It's fucking Utuck.
Fucking.
Oh, boy. All right. You want to...
Okay.
I've been talking for a while. Why don't you hit us?
Talking
the all right. Things. Let's go straight into the bad stuff, and then we'll go on to the good stuff. There's only one bad bit. Don't worry, folks. Let's talk about what happens with Su Ling and Ash at the end. Now, there are two levels I can approach this on that I want to criticize. I'm going to start with the one that's the more nitpicky surface-level stuff and then get onto the actual more technical, involved, narrative stuff as to why this doesn't quite work. So the nitpicky stuff is, Su Ling is not an idiot. Does he not find any of this a bit suspect that Ash is literally stood there in front of a burning, you know, laboratory with a guy plugged full of lead while Shorter's, you know, fucking skull is half gone and he's being dissected? Like, clearly things don't add up here. If he had killed Shorter, does Ash look like the kind of guy who would have then, you know, gone for fucking mad scientist Frankenstein on him? It seems a bit, you know, silly for him to come to that conclusion. Yes, Ash does not offer anything to counteract that, but, like, okay, maybe it's because Su Ling is really young and he's still a bit naive in his own way, but, like, there are plenty of clues here that this shit don't make sense. So, I don't know. But that's the thing, right? That's the surface level argument. That's the thing that I mention only because I want to bring up the wider context of why this is a problem. Ash has enough.
It's funny though. It turns out that he actually, on one level, this is a misunderstanding, but as you pointed out, on another level, it's not. Even though he doesn't respond, he actually did kill him. So his instincts are kind of right.
Yeah. maybe at the end of the day,
in that moment, right? I mean, maybe he's just like...
He's got blood. He's seen red. He's obviously not interested in explaining
it. Shorter sunglasses, shorter body's burning. Ash is there. The guy said Ash killed him. Did you kill him? You're not denying it. Fuck you. Yeah, because like you said, he's a kid, so.
Yeah. So there's that, but there's a wider concern that I have, and I'm going to have to wait and see how the show plays out. But it feels like with the introduction of Su Ling that they're inventing another enemy for Ash when we've got plenty as is. We've got the very obvious major threat of Golzi, and to a lesser extent Arthur, you know, rival that he is. We've got Luk Young in the background doing his own thing, manipulating things for his own ends. He's clearly got a long game on. Like, he's on another level. So we've got plenty of villains as is going on in this particular show. The obvious and the not so obvious, the overt and the covert. Why do we also need Su Ling in this? Now, my theory is that possibly, you know, this is going to tie into something that's happened to Ash, which is the idea of crime and violence and revenge and all that, twisting people, corrupting them, and leaving them, you know, broken and misshapen. But I hope so, because I'm not really into the idea of them inventing more villains at this point for the sake of it. It feels almost like Ash is getting a rogues gallery of sorts, which, were he a superhero, I would buy, but not in this particular context. But yeah, the whole thing rang a little false to me. Not that that necessarily doesn't mean they can't end up doing anything with it later on down the line. I mean, this is something that I'll get to when we discuss Ash himself and the concepts of revenge in a bit, and how it might be tied to a wider thing. But yeah, that whole scene, like, I got what they were going for with it, but like, it didn't quite add up, unfortunately. It wasn't quite the sum of its parts for me.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that, especially because he's such a new character. And maybe that's what they were going for, is they're trying to quickly kind of ingratiate him into the story, give him some hooks by way of things that were already going on. I don't think that he will sort of remain a villain, so to speak, or antagonistic to Ash forever. I don't know. It could be like you said, that he's, you know, he's sort of Ash's consequences waiting for him because of the cycle of crime and how it fucks people up, or he could be part of what
changes. Make your 91 days comparisons now,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah, right. Who can say? I mean, I think it's, yeah. I don't even know. I don't know where he falls. It's so early to judge and figure out. I don't even know if how much of a quote unquote villain Yu Lung is. You know, I mean, he's.
Well, it's like I said, he is the moon, phases of the moon.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's very ambiguous, and he's probably the most enjoyable and engrossing part of his show so far. Although there is going to be a point where I hope his motives have become a bit more transparent. I don't want him simply just constantly dancing around in the background, doing his thing and playing the puppet master all the way through. That'd be nice. Yeah. But there is time, of course.
Well, we know he wants to kill his brothers for killing his mother. That is the A number one, I feel like, top motive.
That sounds like the starting lyrics for a rap song.
Been A1 since day one. You live. he totally like wants to. Yeah, I think that's where he is, and I think, like, Ash, Shorter, and Eiji have figured into the calculus also. I mean, I think, I have a talking point of where I'll address this about Yu Lung, but, yeah, I mean, for me, I think his motivations are fairly clear, but it's like, the thing I'm unclear about, and it's, I'm glad that I'm unclear because it keeps it suspenseful and interesting, are the means through which he will enact his vengeance on his family.
Mm-hmm.
Rubs hands together.
Ooh, looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing more of that guy, that slippery snake.
But I do, I mean, but I hear you. If that scene with the burning lab fell a little flat for you, I get you.
One thing I want to very quickly mention, how you brought Yu Lung. Mm-hmm. He has the tattoo, I think. Is it the dragon or the snake on his neck? I can't remember which animal it was.
I'd venture to say snake.
Snake. Well, if it is a snake, you know what I really like about in this early part of this episode? When Yutz sees what's happening in the dungeon, then reads the newspaper and leans back, we actually get a very prominent look at the tattoo. So the audience's like look at this particular point is, oh, you know, Lutz clearly, you know, on the good guy's side, because he's clearly not down with any of this.
Mm-hmm.
But the tattoo's there to remind you that he is very dual-natured. And because it's that... Ah, dragon tattoo, there we go. So he is still part of that syndicate, so...
That's why they do call him the dragon, yeah, okay.
Pardon me, sorry.
Kutzi, kutzi, as they say in Austria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still not quite over the Lurgy yet, folks. Sorry, hopefully it won't get transmitted down the microphone.
I always called it, or thought it was pronounced Lurgy, but so it's a hard G, then.
Yeah.
Lurgy, okay. All right. So is there more, or is that...
That's about all I want to say on that particular point, but I've got more I want to say on other stuff later.
All right, then I'll hit us with...
Next point.
Okay.
It could very well be the same talking point that I want to bring up, but go for it.
My first talking point is I want to think out loud my thoughts on is Yutlung's vulnerability an act, or is it real? Because he seems to be a bit emotionally vulnerable towards Ash, mm-hmm. you know, when he seems to be taken aback by the state of him and by his love for Eiji, and by, you know, how much Arthur hates him and how just how kind of selfless, I guess, in a way that Ash can be, or at least that's how you harm him, is harming people he cares about. And there are a couple of other different scenes throughout the show to this point in which we see a little bit of that side of him. But boy, when it comes to like talking to Sing, you know, talking to his colleagues, or confronting Abraham, I mean, he just seems so vicious. Like, like surgically efficiently.
He is effective in acupuncture, so surgical is the right word.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, like, because he's such a master manipulator and a you know, puppet master, are those feelings of vulnerability that he shared with Ash meant to be part of his long game? Or are they real? I genuinely don't know. I want to think that he really is sorry about Shorter, that he really did feel something about Shorter, and that he really does feel something besides indifference or hate or ill feeling toward Ash, and that there's more going on besides, like, need to kill my family. But like,
I hope it at least takes time to, you know, read a book or something, or just relax. Play some fucking Fortnite, you're long. Just enjoy yourself for five minutes.
The Art of Acupuncture, 2018 edition. ebook, exactly. Because they have cell phones.
there we go.
Welcome back, Fifi. But yeah, like, that was the thing I was wondering as I was watching the show a second time is, what's real and what's an act when it comes to this guy?
Mm.
And I think that's interesting to think about.
I have two thoughts on this. First off, I'll just acknowledge the fact that he even makes us think this is a sign of the show's strength when it comes to writing for it. Now, the thing is, an ambiguous character like this can't remain ambiguous forever. We do need meat on the bone, sure. But the second point I'll make is, think of it this way. I like to think a little bit that if Lut Yung is the moon, then let's start playing, you know, the whole constellation planetary allegory thing. Who in this case would you argue is the sun?
I mean, the obvious Ash is what you come to immediately because of...
Bingo. And the moon is always reflected by the sun. That's where moonlight comes from. So phases the moon. So this is a very tangled, tortured analogy I'm making here, I accept. But I like to think that Luk Jung's vulnerability that he's showing it is genuine, but I'm also of the opinion it's probably the first time in a very long time in his life he's been cognizant of the ability to even be vulnerable. And that's because he's seen it in Ash. He sees Ash as someone who is basically... I mean, we've seen him be full machismo, full Rambo in this episode. And he is capable of that. Mm-hmm. But he's also capable of being vulnerable. And I think that Lut is actually starting to absorb a little bit from that. Like, okay, maybe I can be as well. Maybe I can accept that. Because his hatred of his brothers has been very clinical and very cold. Mm-hmm. Like, it's for something that clearly affects him so deeply. The fact that he shows no rage over him, if anything, is all the more striking. Mm-hmm. So, I'm of the opinion it is genuine, but I'm also of the opinion I don't think he's currently quite, you know, come to terms with A, the fact that he's even being that way, deliberately or not, mm-hmm. or B, how to interpret it. So, yeah. That's the way that I see it. I think that he's learning. And the funny thing is that then ties into the whole, as I understand it, arc of the whole boiler thing later. Or, well, you know, it's a boiler, but just more the idea of embracing identity, embracing yourself. Which is something I'll get to with Ash in a minute. In that, you know, these guys who've lived in these criminal enterprises for all their lives, or most of their lives, under horrific circumstances, no less, they've had to build walls and armor around themselves. But now they're seeing that they can bring it down a little bit, and it's probably for their benefit to do so. Mm-hmm. So, totally. I would say genuine, but with a lack of, you know, introspective understanding on Yutlung's part. If he's like, look back, he was like, oh, what the fuck was I thinking? Mm. So that's my feeling on it.
Cool. That, yeah, I'm into that. All right.
Next point.
My next talking point?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about everyone's favorite dish best served cold. Revenge! So, okay. Cast your mind back to the scene in which Ash finally plugs fucking Abraham full of lead. Now, there are two things that happen in this that I found really interesting. First off, is that when Ash blows him to hell with a fucking rifle, he's still clicking the trigger afterwards. And secondly, we don't see any part of what happens to Abraham. We get, like, you know, his, like, leg switching or something, and then the pools of blood mm-hmm, after the fact. Mm-hmm. But we don't see him get perforated into fucking mist or turned into, you know, chunky salsa. Now, you can make an apologetic argument that there's a reason for that, and that's because of standards and practices. I mean, this show is violent, but it's not ultra-violent. It's not like, you know, got guts of blood spilling everywhere like I've seen in 90s anime. But I have a different theory on this. Revenge, you see, whenever you desire it, maybe it's even very petty revenge. I mean, I've certainly enjoyed my fair bit of shot and fraud at people who've wronged me, fucking up and, you know, suffering as a result. But when you get to that point where you achieve it, you do feel empty. You do feel, you know, unfulfilled. So recall how I've said before that this show is very good at not showing the outcome. So here's the thing, right? That's meant to, you know, make us feel like Ash does, that we don't get to see it and we're unsatisfied. But he's unsatisfied as well. No matter what he ended up doing to Abraham in the end, it wouldn't have been enough to make him feel better, to heal him. It would have just been momentary catharsis, like taking the drag on a cigarette. That's it. That's all it would have done. And the problem with the whole revenge thing as well is what this is turning it into.
Mm-hmm.
Revenge destroys people, corrupts people, leaves them, you know, as shells of their former self. And it's a cycle that's happening. If you recall, in the very first part of the show's run, this all happened because Ash met some dying randomer in the fucking back alley, and then his fucking best other friend got killed, Skip. Then his fucking brother got killed, and now his other friend got killed. It's going out of control. It's escalating.
His dad, like, you know.
His dad being a dickhead. Yeah,
well, no, he didn't get killed, but his...
No,
his,
he didn't. He didn't.
His
he didn't.
Lover, he didn't. Wife did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So that's all happening. And then what we see here, like, the violence in this episode is ridiculous. But it's an extension of what's been coming before. We had a gunfight before, which was very subdued relative to this. Mm-hmm. This is a spiral out of control. And when Ash is framed against fire at the end, like, he's being forged in that fire into something else. Something he really doesn't want to be. Because, to go off on a slight tangent here, I mean, this is kind of the second point, but these are so close things, it's worth me addressing it now as well. So, Where Ash started was a criminal life in which he was essentially a slave. And then the path that was laid out before him to escape was through AJ. Through, you know, being with AJ and learning to become a regular, normal human being. Not to constantly be acting like he's a cornered animal. However, the show is throwing a curveball at us because that path is still there, but there is a different path that has opened up before him, which is the revenge path. And that's when he'll just keep on going. Keep on fucking killing. Keep on murdering his way through everyone who comes in his way. But, and this is why I think... go on.
Oh, but he will do that while simultaneously preserving the innocence of Eiji. In his
Indeed.
Mind, I think this is what he thinks. And I don't know if he sees this as... I imagine he's not thinking of his own sort of salvation, if you will. I think he's probably just, like you said, seeing that an even darker path lays before him and cares about this kid and wants to protect him from it. Because, yeah, I mean, maybe that purity is kind of a light in his otherwise extremely dark world.
Yep, that's right. But the thing as well is that by declaring that, you know, you're to remain innocent, he's deliberately dividing himself. The brutes I said before, the paths, you know, that path of normalcy with AJ and this path of revenge that soaks in blood, it's a fork. Fork in the road. Doesn't mean he can't cross back over from one to the other if necessary. But he's very clearly delineated one from the other.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, what the show is probably going to deal with going forward is him and his personality being sanded away. What makes him, you know, a regular human being rather than just the animal that he's so often portrayed as. He's becoming more feral. I use that word very deliberately. So I'm really fascinated to see how this goes. I'm very, very pleased with how it depicted the outcome of Abraham Set, because while I will confess I was baying for it, I wanted to see that fucker die. It also is very appropriate, I think, to have the way in which he dies be, well, it is graphic, don't get me wrong, but it's portrayed in a way that is very subdued. Because ultimately, no death was satisfactory. Not for the audience. I mean, if, you know, Ash had decided to tie into that fucking table and take his skull off and then start dissecting his brain while he was alive, throw one idea out there, probably still not enough. And it wouldn't have been satisfactory either. It's a perfect merging of how the audience feels with the character in question.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was exceptionally well done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to see where this road now leads. Weird comparison, but bear me this. In Steins Gate, as what happens throughout the series progresses, it's commented once or twice that Okabe's personality is basically disappearing and being sanded down in so much sawdust because of all the horrible shit that's happening. And he's struggling to maintain his, you know, sense of humanity and sense of self. I get the feeling a similar thing is happening here. And the question is, can Eiji keep Ash, you know, whole? Can Ash be whole on his own without needing Eiji in the first place? And C, is Eiji going to have to cross the line of his own at some point? Because I think that Eiji made, like, Ash made distinction, you know, I don't want you to be a murderer, but here's the thing. As far as I'm concerned, if you have to kill in self-defense like what they've been doing here, I don't see any reason you shouldn't. Now, that's easier said than done, of course. I'm not going to pretend that it's something you can instantly click your fingers and do. The show has been very explicit with that, but what happened in the scene which Eiji was ambushed in the truck. But I do think that Ash delineating that actually might be more harmful for Eiji in the long run than not.
And Ash. Mm-hmm. I think this is my I'll dovetail right into
next point.
My next talking point here. Like, because what you're saying does lead into it. Just that, yeah, I think, I don't want to use the word fetishizing because that sort of cheapens the way that Ash feels about Eiji's purity, but idolizing it and wanting to protect it at all costs, right? To put that on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. I mean, innocence can't stay innocence forever. Innocence, at some point along the line, is lost and becomes experience, you know, always.
Yeah.
And
there's a line from Genome, actually, very fond of. I'll quote here, and it goes, like shelter the boy too much, he'll become no man at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Be a boy forever.
So like, what would happen to Ash if Eiji does have to take a life? Because if he stays near Ash, his own life is going to be in danger mm-hmm. all the time, and he's probably going to be forced yeah. to make that choice.
To mention something that Arthur said that I predicted, and well, it didn't come true, but they certainly thought about it. They were planning to poison Eiji with banana fish and have him kill Ash. They were planning on using him for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they clearly, you know that, you know, Eiji is Ash's, like, you know, JRPG critical weak spot for massive damage. And they were willing to use him in some fucked up ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So sheltering him is all well and going to try and keep him innocent, but the thing is, they're going to force that issue on them at every chance they get.
And how's it going to rock his world? I mean, I think when it usually people aren't very reasonable when it comes to purity and declaring someone pure or not. So I think even if it was a sort of self-defense scenario, like in Ash's mind, I think that would be lost. I mean, we'll see how it pans out, you know, if it does come to pass. I have a strong suspicion that it will, but I'm curious to see if that's, once that's gone, will Ash still view Eiji in the same kind of way? I mean, like right now, you know, in chat I saw, I think Belusi and Luther talking about, you know, Ash seeing Eiji as like his port of call, like his lighthouse, you know, his, the last mm-hmm. kind of bastion of humanity. Does that go away when he's not quote unquote pure anymore? Like when he's had to take a life and when he's dipped his toe into the world of Ash? Cause I mean, he's still at that point, he's still a person, and he's still a person who loves Ash and still, you know, he's still not afraid of him. And just, and I know, I understand kind of Ash probably felt pretty exhilarated at being back to back with this purely innocent young man and saying like, do I scare you? I've just slaughtered a bunch of people. And he says, never. I mean, that's gotta be quite a feeling for him. Go ahead.
Just to follow up something you said there though, about the whole idea of the lighthouse and what he'll see. Maybe if that happens, Neji does have to kill someone or even maim someone or hurt someone. Maybe then it's up on Ash to, you know, use his own humanity while he's got it to bring Eiji back in. There'll be a role reversal of sorts, which would be fascinating
that,
to see.
That could be interesting. That could be very interesting. But I just, what I'm saying seems to require quite a lot of episodes, and I know that there's not an infinite supply of them. But boy, it would be great to see that happen and Ash have to come to grips with, like, man, maybe I was kind of putting this one part or my idea of Eiji as a pure vessel. Maybe I was in love with that, but like he's still this man in front of me and he still cares about me and I still care about him, regardless of how much of a quote unquote sinner he is. Like we're still here. We still have each other. I love to see something like that. I think that would be really great.
Yeah.
I'll kick it to you for a final talking point.
I don't really have a final point to cover. I think I kind of blended my last two together into one, you know, two-sided pizza. You know, you've got meat feast on one, you've got, you know, pepperoni on the other, or whatever your favorite pizza is.
I have a final one if you do not.
Feel free, go on.
Okay, so this is sort of a personal musing. It does relate to the show, but, you know, and again, I saw this pointed out in chat as well, and it's why I made these same things in my notes, right? Like, just the grudges in this show. There were grudges before the show began, and they're multiplying. Just deep-seated, violent, angry, hateful grudges. You know, you have Arthur for Ash. You have Ash for Yutlung for his brothers, Sing for Ash. All these have developed over the course of the show. Many of them, as pointed out by Trickster, are for the the same crime. I think what happened to Shorter is when Ash vowed to take revenge on Yut Lung and Sing on Ash. So there's just a lot of there's so much hate, like, in this show, and it just got me thinking, like, I mean, hate is like, it's like a mighty tree that just takes this deep root in people's hearts.
I'd describe it to a creeping vine myself. Try eradicating it, but it just keeps fucking spreading.
Yeah, or like, it can survive so much, is I guess why I can think of it as a tree. Like, there could be a storm, and the person could go through a whole bunch of shit and endure because that hate is there. And that can be the thing that's propping them up, and that can be the thing that survives. Mm-hmm. And, like, and you can know it's self-destructive. I mean, it is self-destructive, as you say. These things twist people around and send people like Ash on these, like, headlong dives into their own demise, their own bloody and violent ends. But, and you can know that, but what can you do about it in some ways? I mean, there's still those feelings burning within Yut Lung and Ash and Sing. They have to be satisfied. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, something has to sate, like, because just to have this unsated ball of intense, violent feeling, it's gonna find some kind of object to direct it at. And I think it's just, I guess, sort of the way that people have talked and argued, right, and to address it, you know, like, forgiveness, love, like, that just seems like you are then directing all those feelings somehow on yourself, like, you're paying for them, you're paying that price and that cost, and boy, that just seems so shitty. And even if you do that, there's always going to be these powerful people in the world that continue to plant more new seeds of strong trees of hate in other people's hearts. It's like, I mean, it's hard to see an end to the cycle. I mean, you know.
Well, the end is there, I would say. It's just a question of reaching it. This, funnily enough, now that you mentioned it, is where the boiler thing comes back in again. Because what is the counter for hatred? What is the opposite? What is the antonym? It's love. Of course it is. So, I'm going to be curious to see how that plays out. Like, what will drive Ash the most? I mean, love can turn hate after all. Like, you know, if AG gets hurt, of course Ash is going to go on a fucking berserker rampage. He's going to become fucking Doom Guy. And the next episode we watch, we're going to be hearing the E1M1 theme play in our heads. So, I think it's a case of, it's not something that you can quench or get rid of and leave with nothing. It's got to be equitably replaced. Perhaps with, you know, love or affection to someone, from someone, or both ways. And granted, like, one of the things I've seen, like, people suggest about the show is, but where is this romance element in Banana Fish? Like, context is key. There hasn't really been time for. Like, the show has been breakneck from the pretty much the beginning. Like, there's been not really any downside. Yeah.
In this episode, we get some good stuff with that. I think that there's,
there's hints. Yeah, there's moments.
I think this is a key episode where we get both, where we can have our cake and eat it too. We get Rambo, but we get, like, Stay By My Side. We get I'm Not Afraid of You. We get if I Lose You, I'll Go Crazy and I'll Wait for You Forever. Like, all those fantastic kind of lines and moments, like, are, they're few, so, but they're extremely significant.
Yeah, so here's the thing, right? I made the distinction in one of our previous streams between this show and 91 Days. 91 Days, I said, was explicitly about the melodramatic, you know, inevitable end of revenge and violence and criminal activity, which is that it would always end up with self-destruction when no one has anything left. Be it because you start with nothing or because you had everything and it was all taken away from you. But this particular show, Banana Fish, like, this is the thing about the Boil of Element. Like, I probably would not watch a Boil of show on its own because it's not to my particular taste. Now, that's not a statement against the genre or, you know, the label. It's just not my thing. Unless, you know, I heard on recommendation, you know, that it was worthwhile to watch. I mean, I really like Yuri on Ice, for example, and the thing that carved over with was, of course, the ice skating, but it was also a good romance. That being said, this is the point where I think, you know, the Brightest of Banger Fish... Banger Fish, what am I talking about? Banana Fish. Sorry.
Bangers
the
Rise of
Banana Fish. Bangers of Fish. Bangers of Mash. The writers of Banana Fish decide, okay, I want to tell a good crime story. And I want to tell a good Boil story. But what if I could use the two together to tell a really great Boil of crime story where they play off each other? This is what I've said in the previous streams of Far, where I've said that, you know, you're having these ideas presented of how the characters have these relationships that are entirely power plays, entirely control, entirely ownership. And then here's the alternative. Here's the right way to go about it. You know, you've got Ash coming down the path to revenge. You know, he's going full fucking Hamlet here. But who's to, you know, who's to say he can't be stopped from going all the way? Who's to say Asia won't stop? So we'll see. But yeah, this is, I mean, we're not quite halfway through it, but this is such a fascinating way. I'm still really interested in seeing what happens next.
Yeah, I mean,
it's heavy.
So you mentioned, really heavy. I mean, and you mentioned the equitable, the sort of Full Metal Alchemist-esque equitable exchange, hate for love, right? To
take it out, put it in something's place. You need something to occupy that part of your soul.
Yeah, yeah. To...
You can't just take it out.
Like, I mean, how fucked up is it that the thin difference between the two, between a destiny that is full of hate and fire and blood, and one that is full of, even if it's not long, of joy and love, a lot, like, the entire difference is this frail early 20-something boy.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to Warrior. I don't really know how to follow that. Fuck. What do you mean? What the fuck do I say to that? Jesus Christ. Man. Oh, man.
Life, oof, man. Fuck. This
God
show.
Damn it!
Boy.
I got nothing. But I got nothing.
You know, it's funny. Like, I mean, I'm thinking these thoughts, but they're not... As I'm watching the show, it's not actively depressing me because... Because you see the depiction of love on screen, and there's something hopeful. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know, like, what could possibly spring from it to counter these awful, huge, you know, Goliath grudges of men like Arthur and Yut Lung and Sing, and maybe they won't affect them, but Ash has a similar grudge, but like you say, I mean, seeing Eiji and he together is the thing that keeps giving me hope for the show. And
it also makes me really fucking terrified as well.
I know, man.
Oh, man. Episode 23, the most awful thing imaginable happens. And I'm just there, like, I'm going to watch episode 24 and I'm just going to be drinking straight out of a brown paper bag.
Fuck.
Oh, fuck.
Okay. All right, well.
This fucking show. Jesus Christ.
Let's see. I'm going to make one final poll. But while I do, please tell the people at home where to find you on the internet.
Oh, we need to rate.
Oh, yes. Do your rating.
All right. So, for this episode, the only real misgiving, quote-unquote, that I had was, you know, the idea of using Su Ling as kind of a, you know, 11th hour antagonist when we've got plenty to deal with already. But the thing is, that's something that's going to, you know, stand the test of time or not. So I'm hopeful though. Like when I get him into a show, like I tend to usually either ride it with belief that it will continue to be good and will allay my fears, or I'll be really, really cynical and I'll say, well, it was dog shit this week and you know, it'll be dog shit next week. not the case with this show though, of course. So with that in mind, I am ultimately gonna give this episode 4.25 really slow New York news days out of 5.
The newspaper.
Go fucking deep sea diving as world news. Like, what the fuck? Jesus Christ. Wish I had a, I mean, I fucking wish in the modern world that we had a fucking slow news day like that. Every time I fucking look at the newspapers whenever I go to the corner shop, I might as well be reading the fucking doomsday rags. Jesus Christ.
God. Okay. I am going to give this episode... I'm going to give it 4.75.
Ooh. Ooh.
Communicators disguised as hairpins out of 5.
The fucking James Bond tech. Totally. Like, honestly, I'm half expecting Luk Young like, to have, like, a whole, like, Batman-style array of acupuncture needles. Like, he's going to have one, like, he's going to be with AG somewhere, and they're going to have, like, a load of guys down the corridor. He's just like, what's that one for? He's like, you might want to stand back. He just rolls it down the corridor, and it blows up with the force of a fucking hand grenade. Like, seriously, is there anything that that guy is not equipped to deal with? Holy shit.
It's amazing.
Honest.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, I guess before we go, I'll bring up the
Twitter poll.
The Twitter polls that we have for this week. We've got two, once again, that you can vote on for the next 7 days, and they are the polls: is Yutlung emotional? Is bleh? God damn it! Talking not my strong suit, as it turns out. Is Yutlung's emotional vulnerability in episode 10 and prior to that real or an act? Choices being real, he's a real person, or an act, he's playing Ash. And the other poll, does banana fish make you sad? Yes, or sober and serious feeling but not sad are the choices.
So, makes you sober, all right. Jesus Christ, you could... You could watch an average episode of Banana Fish completely tanked, and by the end of it, you'll get completely sober. Like, you do a breathalyzer, and it'll fucking go into the negatives.
Maybe I should have done of sad. Maybe that'll be the next poll. Like, very sad, kind of sad, a little sad, and not sad at all, or something to that effect. Okay. Woo! All right.
Woo.
Let's sign off. Let's end this. Tell the folks at home where they can find you.
Where they can find me? Oh, in just the darkest, smelliest underbelly of hell. It's no, of course not. That's only where I am on Sundays. You can actually find me at Shaden1010 on Twitter, and I'm also on Curious Cat at curiouscat.me/Shaden. Just a quick reminder again, folks, I will be at Revolution 2018 in London in the next couple of weeks. Feel free to check that out. Otherwise, thank you again, as always, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone, for joining in the chat. It's always great to have you all here.
Oh, yes.
Doc, when are we going to actually come back to episode 11? We're a little bit behind, so we need to catch up.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I guess we'll have tomorrow? To talk about it off stream. We could, maybe tomorrow?
I can do it.
Okay. Let's shoot for that. Oh, no. No. No, just thing my calendar was showing to the people at home, so... You just got a sneak peek on stream of my Outlook calendar for a sec. But no, let's see. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
We'll work it out, folks.
We'll let you know. And if you'd like to get in touch with me on Twitter, I'm at The Subtle Doctor. Please tweet me with all the anime opinions and such like. And... You know, if you want to tweet the show, it's at Waroidesho. There's a Gmail, waroidesho@gmail.com. You see on the stream page there, and you can visit us on SoundCloud, Or if you're listening to this via podcast, you can watch these things live streamed on YouTube. And thank you for everyone who is in chat that comes out to hang out with us. We so appreciate it. And they're going to crash all my meetings now. As they, like I said, they've seen my Outlook calendar. Now it's over for me. They're just going to show up at my place of business harassing me about Banana Fish. But that's okay. Worse things in life than that.
Yeah, that is definitely true.
So, and we will be back with episode 11 discussion quite soon. But until then, we are Water Edesho. And we want you all to embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Good night, everyone.